All right. I'd like to introduce our next speaker. Duff Gillespie is professor and senior scholar at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health inside the Bill and Melinda Gates Institute for Population and Reproductive Health. Before joining Johns Hopkins in February 2004, Duff was a visiting scholar at the David and Lucille Packard Foundation. Prior to the Packard Foundation, he was Senior Deputy Assistant Administrator for the Global Health Bureau at the U.S. Agency for International Development, the most senior career position in the agency. He's worked in the population and health field for 33 years and was the Director of USAID's Office of Population for 7 years. Professor Gillespie's research interests include inequity in access to health services in the developing world, priority setting for investments in health, and the integration of reproductive health and HIV/AIDS. Dr. Gillespie.
Thank you, Jason. And thank you all for coming. I was whispering to Karen that I've had presentations have been boycotted and had more people show up. So it's always a challenge when you're on the last day of a long meeting in a beautiful city like San Diego. So thank you for coming. The segue into my presentation, I couldn't be better from Karen's and Jason's. But just to kind of set the stage a little bit, there were two questions that came up which are very relevant about what I'm about to say. One was raised by Doug, and I don't know who at the Global Health Council said that, but they're absolutely wrong. In fact, it's just the opposite. If you look at both Senate language, appropriation language, and the House, they're quite explicit about what entails family planning, and it's very, very straightforward. It's getting contraceptives to people so they can have family, the family size that they desire. Thank heavens that there are those earmarks. That's not to say there aren't parts of Congress who are very anti, but the bipartisan support, it is family planning they're talking about. So it's completely different. The other thing is just kind of ironic. You have a USAID project with MSH to try to convince people to make an application to the Global Fund. You have another part of the U.S. government that is doing its best, the Presidential Initiative on HIV/AIDS, and I'll try to avoid acronyms, that's doing its best to protect the billions of dollars from being used for family planning, and I would say is actually kind of basically still anti-family planning. I mean, it goes beyond just the use of funds, even though many of the people there actually used to work in the Office of Population. So, how do I change this?
Should just be able to click left.
Okay. There's that. So I'm going to talk about something that hopefully is going to help change the situation that we've been talking about today. And this is an advocacy project, an evidence-based advocacy project, that focuses on a fairly narrow objective. That is how to get more funds for USAID's family planning program. That's what this project's about. It complements larger advocacy efforts, of which there are many, that are trying to do not only to get more funds, but also to change some of the policies and other things which have impeded the application of USAID funds for family planning. But we're focusing on the money. And we have generous support from the David and Lucille Packard Foundation and the Gates Institute. This is being headed by five former directors of the U.S. Populations Program, and this gives our various names, where we're at now, and our tenure during that period of time. So basically, we go from Carter to the present President of the United States, quite a span of time. This was an effort that took some time to develop, because one of the things we wanted to do, and this was perhaps the most valuable thing we did, was to discuss with people who we were trying to influence, or representing that group of people we were trying to influence, which is basically the new administration and the new Congress, and people who hopefully will use this as part of a larger effort. And there were a number of changes that took place from our original idea based on these consultations, of which there were many. One of the things that they emphasized very much is that the only thing we really bring to the table that other people aren't bringing is the fact that we're the former directors of USAID's population program. So everything that we should talk about should be pretty much through the lens of USAID's program. And that we want to appeal to the widest spectrum of policymakers who influence the budget process. So this means that we're going to lean over backwards, not to stick a stick in someone's eye, and not to try to provoke potential allies. So there's a lot of things that we believe very strongly in that we're not going to be including in our messages and our materials. This isn't something to have sort of payback time now that the Democrats are likely to take over the Congress, but to try to use this new situation for the betterment of family planning. Kind of related to what I was just saying. So we're not going to be talking about, for example, the hateful global gag rule and a lot of other important issues. Okay, why mount it now? Some of you have seen this, others haven't. This is, to me, a very powerful thing that we need to remind ourselves. First message here is if you look at the blue representing the Democrats, from 1984 to today, there's only been a two-year period in which the Democrats have been in control of the White House, the Senate, and the House of Representatives. Just 2 years. Among other things, that has meant that we haven't been able to mount a very positive approach. Now, during those two-year periods, this is also where Cairo took place and also where Timothy Wirth was in the State Department and a very powerful advocate for reproductive health and family planning. You saw this spike. And then you saw something that quite disturbing, cautionary tale about ready to be told. What happened to the request level? These are what the White House sends up to the Hill, and so this is how much money we want. And here's what Congress actually appropriates. So, interesting little factoid here. You can see that for the last 4 years of the Clinton administration, that the request level from the White House was actually less than the first 4 years of the Bush administration. Now, isn't that something? Now, one of the things, the cautionary tale in that, is that a slam dunk in terms of change in parties in the White House doesn't mean that you're going to have a change in budgetary and programmatic reality, even though you might have a dramatic change in rhetoric, which you did have under Clinton. But once Timothy Wirth left, the support for family planning within the administration actually plummeted. And a number of us within USAID were fighting like crazy just to hold on. And there was a great deal of complacency among the advocacy community. Now, why did this take place, this weird thing here? That's Colin Powell. Colin Powell basically said, you know, closet, pro-choice person, and he said, we're going to keep up the levels for family planning. So it's not just who's in, on the Hill, who's in the White House, but who's kind of running the shows. Very quickly, this shows you the basically losing, in terms of spending money, $1968. We're actually below where we were in the 70s. Here's a graphic kind of showing the battle plan, if you will, for making the case. And we're working through the advocacy community. There's going to be a media component, and opinion leaders are champions. So we will be, the five former directors, will be active, but we also are looking for other ways of getting our message across. So organizations like Population Action International hopefully will use the material, and we would coordinate with them in their efforts. And here's our audience, primarily Congress and the White House. But we do have sort of a secondary emphasis on other donors, especially the Europeans and the Japanese, and actually China. We've been having some discussions with them lately. The international community, which is kind of a catch-all term to mean UNFPA, IPPF, WHO, and, of course, the executive branch. But since the money really comes from the Congress, we are going to be looking at the White House and Congress as a focal point. So the executive branch would be the new USAID administrator, the new head of the Global Bureau, people like that at that level. Quickly go through it. Okay, so I'm going to go through some of the things we're going to do very quickly. This is sort of the outline of our report. And since I did this over the weekend, we actually changed the strategy a little bit, so this is somewhat dated. But it'll still give you an idea. I'm not going to cover everything. So one of the things we're going to be looking at and showing is that USAID's program has been very much a family planning program throughout its almost 40-year history. And we want to remind people that, in fact, there is a strong, as Jason pointed out, a strong association between contraceptive use and the average number of children. And we also are staying away, you'll be happy to know the person that asked that, in part of our consultation, we showed a before and after. Our two different versions of a chart, one with TFR, one with CPR, and it was a scattergram of countries arraying those two with TFR going down as CPR goes up. And then we changed the wording. Instead of TFR, we said average family size. Instead of contraceptive prevalence, we used percent using contraception. And we said, which of these do you think would be more appropriate for busy staffers and senators? And their answer was neither. said, you know, they hate scattergrams up there. You know, you need to even make it more simple than that. So we are going to have a professional graphic person, but this is the type of thing we're going to be trying to do, things like that. This kind of expands on a little bit of the comments that Jason made, is that what we did here is look at 1968 dollars and look at the women of reproductive health age and just show that and USAID countries. We're only looking at countries where USAID works. And you can see that that's declining. The need is greatest in Africa, and that's going to be one of our focus. This is kind of interesting. This is looking at a number of countries and the unmet need. And the unmet need, for those of you unfamiliar with that concept, it's basically identifies women who are not using modern contraceptives but who have indicated that they don't want a child in the near future, next 2 years, or they want no more children. So that they express a desire to control their fertility but are not using family planning. And there's been lots of studies that show that that's a legitimate concept. So what's interesting here is that the unmet need in Africa is actually greater than the current contraceptive use, the blue. And believe me, sometimes we get very frustrated working in Africa, and a lot of people will say, well, there's a high desired fertility and, you know, it's going to take socioeconomic development. All that's true. But there is a high unmet need, and there's enough projects now in a couple of countries which show that there is this latent demand for family planning. If you get high-quality services out there, in fact, they will be utilized. And this is an example, and we actually will have a case study of this in our report showing what happened with Rwanda in a two-year period. It went from 10% to 27%. That's the highest increase in contraceptive use ever recorded. And a lot of people had doubted this. We've looked into it. We've talked to people in Rwanda. We've had one of our faculty go out there, and I think it's actually real. So a phenomenal change. This is a draft, so please don't use it. That's all to the audience that's listening to this, because it's still being worked on. But it's an update of the 2001 graph that was done, and it basically shows what would happen in terms of the gap between funding if there was no increase in donor funding for contraceptive use. And this is a projection of what would be required to meet some UN projections of use. That's just a graphic that shows you how it's going to be laid out, pretty, et cetera. Okay, so one of the things that we're going to concentrate on, it's not going to be the messages like some of the messages that Karen did. You know, why invest in family planning? It's going to be why invest in USAID. So we have a series of these sort of case studies of what USAID has done. And we've done one on community-based distribution, and this follows that. So basically, USAID was very important in getting FDA approval for Depo-Provera, but they also were responsible for some pioneering work in getting CBD programs to use Depo-Provera and to analyze its effectiveness and the safety. And that's been expanded in a number of countries, and now it's in the process of being expanded actually on a national basis. And down here, you'll see, in addition to that, there's certain disadvantages with Depo-Provera because it's still in a syringe. It's taking much more longer than anything I would like, but basically we're working with PATH. Sorry, I sometimes drop back to we, even though they, USAID, are working with PATH to develop a Depo-Provera for suitable for Unigec, and that's going to be available in a year or so. I'm almost out of time, so let me just go here. It's another example of the investment that USAID to improve contraceptive technology. We did a survey some of you may participate in. We're going to have a 12-page briefer report, lots of graphics, pictures, et cetera, and also two-page in the following areas. And this is the result of the survey, and here are the winners, if you will. And what's interesting on this, in terms of the, you know, family planning being a dirty word, this was an international survey monkey, and this didn't surprise anybody because it's still a very hot issue. This didn't surprise everybody, but this did. That was the third most popular topic for doing a briefing, and we sent out around 27 of those. And then the rest of them are interesting. Family planning MDGs, we tempted about dropping that because MDGs is considered a food additive on the Hill. They don't know what the hell you're talking about. But because we do want to talk to our colleagues in other countries where MDGs is a organizing a principle for development, so we are going to keep that. Again, we're using some professionals. It's going to be all pretty, multicolored, et cetera. Now, so all these efforts, and, you know, we like to refer to ourselves as the Fabulous Five. You know, it's going to be really great. They're enthusiastic. The next election is going to, you know, it's going to be a big change. So what could go wrong? Lots could go wrong. And some of it already has happened. The financial crisis, hyper-competition for funds. There are an awful lot of good programs that have been neglected and abused for the last 8 years who deserve to be funded and are to get more funds. And international family planning is one of many. So we don't know exactly how we're going to work out in that competitive marketplace. Hopefully we will, and we're not going to get into the situation saying this investment in this area is better than that area. That is something that we don't believe in, but it's a wrong thing to do. So we're not going to say we can have a bigger impact on maternal health than emergency obstetrics. No. There needs to be more money invested in emergency obstetrics, too. And then these two we already talked about, or this one, is that who gets appointed to USAID is very important. And then the last is a surprise. What could possibly go wrong? And we've seen for the last, our recent history, that there's a lot of things that go wrong, and some of them probably will. So we're optimistic, but we're not naively so. And thank you. Okay.
I think we have time to take a question if somebody has something that they'd like to ask Dr. Gillespie.
Yeah.
Simple question. How can we all help?
Well,
I saw a lot of possibilities.
Yeah. We are going to have hard copies of this, but also electronic copies and a web page. And we hope that people will use this material. And if you learn of some colleague, for example, that's going to have a position in the new administration, to contact us so we can arrange for having a briefing. We hope this will be picked up and used by a lot of people. And it's going to be written in such a way and presented in such a way that, you don't have to say we agree with everything here, but, we will have an estimated budget. In fact, we already have the budget estimated. I'm not going to announce it quite yet because we want to make sure we have all the numbers right. But let's say it's compatible with the $1 billion ask effort that's been going on. Using a totally different methodology for coming up with it, by the way. Interesting. Yeah.
Have you thought about trying to do something like a mini version of an inconvenient truth where you really animate some of these graphs and so forth so that people could actually see how total fertility went down as contraceptive use went up? Things that sort of enliven the presentation. It sounds like it's going to be pretty static in print and that kind of thing, but it seems to me to capture people's understanding a little bit.
Well, great idea, but that's beyond our our technical capability and also our budget. We're doing good to do this. We have set aside time and money to actually do briefings. I mean, we hope to be able to actually do good old-fashioned face-to-face discussions. Yes, please. It will be at the Bill and Melinda Gates Institute. You can't access it now because it doesn't exist. But there will be a website, and you can go to Bill and Melinda Gates Institute at Johns Hopkins, Bloomberg School, and there'll be a link there. And we also will have, what references we used, and, there'll be more than just the reports there.
This will be the last question.
Yeah. The two-page briefers go into that, and yes, the answer is yes.